Hi, John.
Hey, Alex.
Do you know what I hate?
What's that?
Coming up with something to hate about this movie.
Oh, I can fill that in for you, no problem.
Nah, I could probably do a couple things. But yeah, the movie we're referencing is Super.
Super. What have we done with innocence? It disappeared with time, it never made much sense. Adolescent president. Wasting another night on planning my revenge. One in ten. One in ten. One in ten. Don't wanna be your monkey wrench. Far more indecent accident. I'd rather be the suffer baby.
Rainn Wilson, Juno.
Yeah, Ellen Page.
Ellen Page. All right.
Kevin Bacon?
Yeah, Kevin Bacon was supposed to be Jean-Claude Van Damme.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Oh, that's fun.
Apparently, he was AWOL, and James Gunn didn't trust the fact that he'd actually show up to the shoot, so he recast like a week before.
Smart move.
Watching The Umbrella Academy on Netflix.
Which I have not seen.
Ellen Page is in it. And she is delightful.
She's great in this.
Yeah. I didn't realize how much I liked Ellen Page until Umbrella Academy. And then, so my heart is so open going back watching this. And I'm just like, oh, she is so watchable. Like, I want, like, I just want her. I just, even though her character's, like, well-written, but a shitty human.
Absolutely. But yeah, but she and, in my opinion, she and Kevin Bacon are the only spots of life in this whole fucking thing.
I think Rainn Wilson did really well, but I don't disagree with you, but I'm kind of, it's the way it's written. I think you have to, if you buy into it,
that's the thing.
Good.
Like,
if you don't buy into it.
Well, it's like, I think whatever Rainn Wilson is doing is fine. The movie doesn't support him, I guess. It's not Rainn Wilson's fault. He's fine.
It's weird because I actually really like this movie. I'm just going to put the cards on the table. But I don't disagree with you. I think this is one of those things that you kind of have to, you either buy into it or don't. And if you don't, it's tough. It's funny. I'm not comparing this to Buckaroo Banzai, but I'm use that as an example of like one of those movies where if you don't take that premise in, that movie must be unfucking watchable.
Sure.
Now, I happen to be on your level where I take that premise in. I'm there. But I 100% could see that if you don't take that in, oh boy,
what
that
are you
is
doing?
Gonna be difficult. And I think this movie.
No, there have been
like
plenty
that.
Of movies where I'm like, I can't get on board with this premise. Or
but this one really got me. But there were parts watching where I could see the other side really well. Like there is the Liv Tyler's face in his vomit talking to him.
Yeah.
And so you take the deep breath in. I was like, oh, that's awesome. Yeah. But I take that breath, step back and go, oh, I can see why that would be really, really terrible.
So this movie was made by James Gunn, who everyone knows is the Guardians of the Galaxy guy.
I know him from his great Twitter from about 8 years ago.
Right.
I love his tweets
Which
from back
this,
then.
This movie makes a lot of sense with that in context, because some of the dialogue or whatever that's played for laughs, you're like, oh, this was just, you were in that zeitgeist.
Well, yeah, he was edgelord, post-Kevin Smith
Absolutely.
Kind of filmmaker.
But he made a book. This was the movie he made after Slither. Which is so much fun.
But this comes after Slither?
I believe this comes after Slither, which is, like, that movie was a blast. I had so much fun.
Totally
low budget.
I liked it a lot.
But this one is so much rougher and calls back to his earlier days of writing trauma movies, which I couldn't help but think about in this because it tries to balance that, like, here's some wacky stuff with this horrible gore, but it can't, the tonal shifts are just so huge and it can't really reconcile what exactly it is trying to say as a movie. That it's tough to get on board with it. So this is a movie about Rainn Wilson is this guy, Frank Darbo, whose two favorite memories are marrying his incredibly beautiful wife, Liv Tyler, and tattling on someone
I'm
to the cops.
I'm literally smiling just you saying that is such a fun. That was so fun when that's revealed. Because maybe this comes to, well, I mean, you're a sad boy at times too, but like, boy, like this spoke to my depression self a lot of just like, oh, man, because I went through my head of, like, I think he has more good memories than I do. Like, I don't even have something I would draw in crayon to wake up to.
Well, yeah, so, but he, Liv
Except
Tyler
for that picture I have of the night we met.
Of us, yeah, yeah. High-fiving.
Yeah, audience at home, you didn't know, I literally did the Showcase Showdown, arms out.
Yeah, it was good.
Motioning to nothing. My space work is amazing for a person on a podcast that's not being filmed.
But his wife, who's a recovering drug addict, gets lured back into the world of drugs through Kevin Bacon. Playing Jacques or Jock, which I like that is
him
interchangeable.
Him spelling Jacques as J-O-C-K is
great. Yeah. I do enjoy that. And then he becomes, as a result of that, he becomes a superhero called the Crimson Bolt, who just hits people over the head with a wrench.
It's so good.
It's like, it's an idea that I like. It's an idea that, like, there's a bunch of movies that came out around the same time, within a few years, where you have, like, Kick-Ass.
Yeah, this was a year from Kick-Ass, yeah.
Defendor with Woody Harrelson, Special with Michael Rapaport.
Defendor,
it's, I've not seen all of it, but yeah, it's Woody Harrelson. Same thing, where it's like, what if a real person tried to fight crime? What would that actually look like?
And that's where the lead character's name is Diffender.
Is yeah.
Because in
the
past,
Harry Potter universe.
He was holding, no, I was making a Hodor reference.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. Going back to your tonal thing,
mm.
Again, can agree with you, but I think he lands it in the kind of first person, untrustable narrator, insane movie way, where the fun is almost like you should feel bad for having fun. And I think that kind of comes across of like, that's why the violence is so like, that first time he hit somebody with a fucking wrench,
yeah.
But it's shot as if someone goes, holy fuck, he just hit him with a wrench.
But that's the problem, because like if the movie played out more like that, and maybe I'm just dumb, but like, so the whole opening credits is this lovely 2D animation with the like crayon drawing.
Yeah.
It's all fun and exciting and whatever. And the music has that kind of same feel. But the movie doesn't do that. But at the same time, it wants to do that. You know what I mean? Like it doesn't just go, I'm going to be this ironic detachment and see, oh no, here's the reality of this guy hitting people. It still wants to play off that superhero stuff and be like, no, this is great and good. And in fact, the ending, which we'll get to, is a nightmare.
Yeah, I was reading it as the superhero-y bang pow upbeat stuff is Rainn Wilson's kind of internal monologue of him like kind of mythologizing his complete and utter psychopathy. Like,
but that would make more sense to me if he was a comic book guy. He's not. When he goes to the, like, when he's talking to Ellen Page at the comic book store, which is how he meets her, because he's going to comic books, and he's like, I need to learn about, he gets the whole idea to be a vigilante superhero because he watches a, like, a Bible Man type of superhero
which,
played by
Nathan
Fillion.
And I will say this right now, as much as I enjoy Super, if we were talking about an hour and a half long version of the Nathan Fillion led Bible Man type thing, oh boy, would I be happier.
I'd have more fun.
Sean Gunn as the demon devil guy, who I think mm-hmm. that's Sean Gunn.
I have no idea, but you might be right.
He is delightful in the just. I love actors acting hammy on purpose.
Mm-hmm.
There's something I feel like closer to them. Like, oh, that looks fun.
There's a certain way to do it. Yeah.
Like acting for real seems hard, but like acting hammily is just like, oh that sounds. I want to be an actor now.
So here's a question please. I have.
You talk about something good.
Well, no, this is not good. But why was a lot of time spent on the weird hentai thing? And when I say all the time, I mean like, you know, 10 seconds. But that was a weird amount of time to spend. Because I don't know if that's supposed to tie into later when he has the hallucination where all the tentacles come out.
It's definitely
but it seems like not enough to tie into that.
It's definitely tied into later
yeah.
in that I think that's just an establishing fact of this movie is to be read as a psychotic break, not an actual birth of a superhero. This is not Batman Begins. This
yeah.
is a crazy guy with a wrench.
Yeah, but that's all the more reason why I hate the ending.
I don't love the ending, but I think the rest of the movie is such fun that I can just ignore it. I think it's fine, but I think it doesn't let. So, I mean, yeah, let's get to the ending.
Yeah,
we'll get to the ending when we do. It's just the other thing that's terrible about this movie is, and I'm rarely going to say this, is Liv Tyler is not good in this.
Well, Liv Tyler has nothing to do in it.
Yeah.
Liv Tyler is a cipher. Liv Tyler is.
But when she says stuff, it's just. It's lifeless. I think it's just bad casting. It just. You needed somebody more. She's playing it as nodding out drug lady.
Mm-hmm.
And you need to play it as like manic pixie drug lady.
Well, you don't get. You don't get the sense of why he loves her so much. Only in that you're told he loves her so much and she's pretty. Like, yeah. At the end when it's all like, she needs to be free because she's smart and does all this stuff, you have no indication of that as a character up until that point.
And I think if they had cast somebody a more upbeat, jubilant style of falling apart, you know, the manic side of manic depressive, I think you'd probably buy the her being smart.
Maybe, but I think so much of that is just the script, because it's like, oh no, we love each other and it's great. And yeah, she was recovering. And then she just did drugs again and now she's gone.
Oh, see, I don't believe that.
There's 2 seconds in that
place. But you took it more literally than I did. I don't think there was ever actual love there. It's explained by her sister or her bestie that they're at the table where it's like, they say you shouldn't make major life decisions a year after quitting.
Mm-hmm.
He's a psychotic person that will fall for anybody. And she is in really early recovery and just went for somebody. It's two broken people trying
right.
to fix each
but
other,
it's,
which
it's,
never works.
No, absolutely doesn't work. But there's not any sort of sense of jubilation or whatever from her. This isn't like, for example, for some reason, I'm thinking of this. Catherine Keener in Being John Malkovich. Where John Cusack is obsessed with her and she's awful to him, but you still see why. You still see why he's obsessed with her.
Yes.
This is, she's
oh, no,
like 100, barely
yeah.
been.
Well, that's what I thought about the manic side, is that if she had tons of energy, you could read it as, oh, this is misplaced energy, that now when she's smart at the end, you're like, oh, all that was going to being manic,
I think
nutty.
It's probably a come up because, like I said, I don't think the script does her any favors.
No, but I think if you had an upbeat kind of, manic actress, it would have worked better. Mm-hmm. But Liv Tyler is real awkward in this, and I kind of feel bad for her. Like, she's a good actress.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's a good point to bring up, though, is that the relationship is not real, like, and he never buys it, which I think is a strength of this movie, is that at the end, even when he's all aware of himself and his kind of shortcomings or whatever it is,
mm-hmm.
he still thinks, oh no, he still believes the narrative that they were in love and married for a good reason, which is wrong and objectively wrong and shown to be wrong in the movie.
Right.
Which I think is more depth than this movie would have or should have gone to in a movie of this kind of, like, Kick-Ass doesn't go to that level.
No, but Kick-Ass is a completely different tone of this movie. Like,
oh, no, of course.
Kick-Ass is so much more like, what if you were a superhero and it was awesome because being a fanboy rules? Whereas it's like, what if you were a superhero and you're actually a psychopath?
But Kick-Ass was supposed to be, you're a psychopath,
no,
the Big Daddy, but it doesn't.
Yeah, it doesn't. But it's too cajoling of fanboys, whereas this doesn't want to do that.
Which, I mean,
hats off.
But. Yeah, that's why I think the strength of this movie is that. But there's also I think Rainn Wilson did a good job, but again, I'm not in love with the casting because I think he's too. You empathize with Rainn Wilson too much just as a human.
Mm-hmm.
Like, not even just him in a movie, just looking at him. He's one of those people you want to empathize with. And I think you need to have him. The end of the movie, not to get to the end, but you're with him too much in this. Like, you're a little bit too much on his side to have this have a message beyond, vigilantism.
I never had that problem. I think his performance is too flat and weird.
Yeah.
That could work in a different movie, but the tone of this movie is not like he's too pathetic for me to be completely on board with, but also like kind of a violent psychopath, but they didn't really like go far enough in either direction to me.
I feel like
for
that would hit you perfectly. You know, just a doughy Midwest.
Shut the fuck up!
We're
not talking about time travel.
Ow, stop throwing that fucking wrench at me.
No, he's just aware enough to be like about how he's awful to be awful, but just.
Oh, no, I just mean like as an actor, it's. You know, there's those people that you can kind of distance.
Yeah, he's a weird uggo. I get it.
Well, no, I don't even think he's ugly. I think he's got like an interesting face. But he's a little too much like you're kind of rooting for him. Not even just this, just when you see him, you're like, I want that guy to work out. Or like, I want him to have a good life.
No, he's good at gracefully playing ungraceful people.
Yeah, and I think that doesn't work here. So James Good originally wanted to cast,
Gallagher?
No, Ballad of Ricky Bobby. John C. Reilly.
Oh, yeah.
But I think you can hate John C. Reilly a little bit easier.
No, I just think John C. Reilly is much more of a. He doesn't have that like anger thing. Like he's more just pitiful and goofy. You know what I mean? Like I've never seen John C. Reilly play like a mean role.
No, I don't think it would be a better casting necessarily, but it definitely would have. I think you could have hated him more. But I think some of the.
I disagree. I think I would have hated him less if it was John C. Reilly. It would have been more just silly.
I just think either way. I mean, I don't know who would be perfect, but I think Rainn Wilson was not the... not the choice for this.
Yeah, I don't know. I think, but again, I'm much more willing to blame the script and direction than the actor. I think they did fine. I just think the movie just cannot. On one hand, I salute the attempt at doing like these big tonal shifts. I just don't think it paid off. I think the soundtrack was a big hurt for this movie. I think the soundtrack was much more like indie darling, like goofy stuff than this movie needed.
Yeah, the soundtrack, I think I enjoyed as songs, but didn't fit the movie particularly well.
Yeah.
I want to find like the perfect person to play this because you're right. The script isn't perfect and directing, I think he misses the tone slightly, but I think better casting for the leads, for him and, well, no, not the leads, just him and...
Yeah, because Ellen Page is fantastic. Yeah,
him and Liv Tyler. No, Ellen Page is great. And Bubbles from The Wire is delightful. Actually, everybody in this other than Liv Tyler and him.
Michael Rooker, for what little he has to do in this movie, is fantastic. Michael Rooker.
Is a treasure.
Yeah.
Him, like, kind of being bored and disgruntled with his... Like, when he goes outside, he's like, oh, God. He sees how bad this is going
to
go.
Yeah, or when he just offers the candy to Rainn Wilson by just shaking it at it, like, right in his face. It's both aggressive and, like, offering. It's wonderful. And I love him. And I also... It's one of those things I don't feel like he was wasted in this movie.
No.
I just think like he was very effectively utilized, and I kind of want to see more with that character. He's basically just doing narration about the whole thing, about how this is happening. And then Nicolas Cage, Kevin Bacon comes over and was like, hey, what's her name? Sarah? Sally? I don't even remember.
Sarah. Boy, wait. Sorry. Continue your point, but it just, when he comes over, that egg scene
is
so great.
Yeah. It's great because he's like, basically, is your wife here? And Rainn Wilson's like, no. So are you cooking eggs? And so he has basically the guy that you can tell from the get-go is like, well, this guy's bad. And Rainn Wilson cooks some eggs. It's a great scene.
Not to use right-wing terminology here, but what a cuck.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, totally.
He literally shows up and goes, oh, where's your wife that I'm fucking? Oh, she's not here? Make me breakfast.
Yeah, there's not even a conversation of why the strange man is looking for a wife. Is just like, so no, good. I'm gonna make you eggs.
And that's what I love about like the character, you know, the lead. He doesn't like. It's not even like he doesn't fight back. He literally, it's. That's my stapler.
Yeah, but Kevin Bacon is also,
he makes eggs for him, John.
But you can
really good eggs.
Kevin Bacon is also very charming.
They're not brown.
In that, but it's just like the way he's kind of insulting him.
Yeah,
by like, oh, your egg making skill is great, but it's also, you can see how that would be taken as a compliment.
Yeah,
if you're Frank, but Kevin Bacon again is a great bit in this movie.
Yeah, Kevin Bacon. Here's two things. One. Kevin Bacon's alive, right?
As far as
I know. That's Footloose died.
What?
Who's Footloose?
Kevin Bacon.
Okay, who's Roadhouse?
Patrick Swayze.
I get Footloose and Roadhouse confused.
Yes, you do. There's another episode where this happened.
Oh, yeah. This
still baffles me.
Oh, wait, I don't know. They've got big hair. They're from the 80s.
They're Kevin Bacon. Okay. They're very different people.
Yeah, one's dead, apparently.
Yes, well, that would be one
they
difference.
They both look like they smoke.
Oh, smoke. I thought you said spoke. I was like,
well,
yeah,
yes,
they both.
I should hope so.
They were in the talkies. Yeah.
The wife leaves, and he is unconvinced of it. Here's a weird subplot. Rainn Wilson goes to the cops because his wife left him.
Yeah, I mean, you get the sense of him being desperate and looking for justice.
Yeah.
That somehow that's... thing. And of course the detective is naturally like, yeah, that's dumb, go fuck somebody is basically his advice.
Yeah, what an odd...
Well, this is an odd... ugly movie in a lot of different ways.
Yeah.
I mean, like, I legitimately do not like the way it looks. It's very high contrast. Maybe it was just like the streaming or whatever, but it seemed very high contrast, and a lot of the handheld stuff seemed very raw. And again, back to James Gunn's Troma stuff.
It felt, I mean, frankly, it felt like the budget.
Absolutely, yeah.
It felt like this movie needed like another like million or so. Like,
but I think, but in some ways it fits the tone of the movie too, because a lot of what he's doing is very, very ugly. Yeah, so he's all depressed and he goes home and turns on the TV, watches a good like 15, 20 seconds of hentai for some reason.
Yeah.
And then stumbles upon...
John, who doesn't want to go home and watch some Yiratsuki Doji?
Who, I ask you?
I couldn't tell you.
Is that an actual thing, or were those
just... Yeah, Yiratsuki Doji. Yeah, there's like one anime fan out there going, one, you mispronounced that, and two, nice reference.
He had to stop masturbating for 5 minutes and be like, oh, how dare you get that wrong.
Yeah.
But then he stumbles on this Nathan Fillion starring Bible Man thing, where it's this... He's a Christian superhero, and he's stopping... Oh, I think it's just Sloth is this episode.
Where the devil wants him to... Yeah. because he put like sloth juice in their high school food.
Mm-hmm.
And I love how every time they cut to the Bible Man stuff, like the girl in Bible Man has like its chesty McFucking cleavage. Oh, you always skip to, here's an awkward thing. Rainn Wilson is remembering his prom.
Yeah.
And then walks in on his girlfriend getting railed by some other guy at the prom.
Yeah.
So we're watching 17, 18-year-olds fuck in that scene?
Well, yeah, but that was already starting to lose, because it's when she, like, sees him and, like, gives him the wave off.
Yeah.
I understand you're probably seeing it from his point of view or how he felt, but it just felt very, like, I don't know, not on the nose, but, like, you're introduced by this character by having, like, his flashbacks of people peeing on him and then that happened.
Yeah.
That was all a bit much for me. Maybe I'm a little puritanical here, but I'm like, really, this is as pathetic as this character is. Like,
the peeing I didn't mind. I guess I didn't agree to watch seniors in high school fuck.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think it's as immoral as all that in terms of, like, when you watch a high school movie, that shit tends to happen.
Yeah, but I'm not worried about morality. I just, like, I showed up for a weird superhero movie.
Yeah.
Like, if I was watching a movie that takes place in high school, I'd go, there's a chance I'm going to see some, like, you know, ersatz high school tits.
Mm-hmm.
But not in a superhero movie. Like, if they're
sitting there behind your hockey mask, just furious.
Yeah, well, with my screen mask.
Right.
But, like, if I went to, like, Batman Returns, and in the middle of it, he goes to Gotham High and cranks one out looking through the fucking girl's locker room window.
Him cranking one out is a different thing than him, like, watching his high school girlfriend shoot on him.
Look at Mr. Homophobia. But I think, homophobia? Yeah, you're afraid of the dick. Oh, high school girl tits. That's totally fine.
Wait, no, you're twisting right my words.
Oh, sure. Yeah, good thing I'm editing this one.
No, I'm just saying.
Like girls in high school. John, I can't believe you just said that.
That's goddamn. That's too much my voice.
My spot on John impression.
Yeah, I can't compete with that.
Which is my voice, but saying duh. Yeah. You've never said duh. I've edited it's significant amount. You've literally never said duh in your fucking life. And
I say duh a lot.
Do you? I've literally never heard you say duh.
That's when I'm legitimately trying to do something at the computer and I can't figure out how to go duh.
That's funny.
Yeah. No, but again, it's one of those things, like, it's a very tonal thing where it's like, oh, they could have just been making out. No, they're fucking. Yeah, okay, why wouldn't they be, you know?
That part did leave me, I mean, beyond the, I don't particularly want to watch ersatz high school fucking, but, like, it didn't work for the tone of the film. Thankfully, it was quick. And then him getting peed on was a little weird, only because, and this is very nitpicky, but just walk away.
Yeah, no, yeah.
Just, if someone's peeing you, don't walk around, like, in a circle, they're, like, they're glorify. Don't Donald Trump under their pee string.
Yeah, I mean, it's, I guess, you know, to show you how pathetic he is, but again, it is sort of this cartoonish, yeah, like, what, just take two steps forward, you'll be fine.
Yeah, so he gets the idea of I did like this part where he has a dream that God speaks to him. He sees Bible Man in his backyard, and God speaks to him in the form of tentacles coming out through the side of the screen and cutting his head open, and God's finger touching his brain.
Well, here's my problem with that. So you've already had this narration from him about his backstory and all the stuff. Mm-hmm. And then later it's like, oh, yeah, also I've had visions. Like, good 10 minutes into the movie, it's like, oh, yeah, by the way, I see things. And then I did like the bit where it's just Jesus sitting on his wall. And he's like, hey, it's not a big deal. Don't worry about it.
Yeah.
But then that doesn't come into play for any of the rest of the movie.
Yeah, it was a weird line. I wanted to take it as it's just him mythologizing again. But the Jesus being on the wall is a weird kind of flashbacky thing.
Yeah, but it's more just like, if he had visions at all through the rest of the movie, that would be fine. That would be a setup for something.
He saw his girlfriend's face in the puke.
Sure. That's not enough for me, I guess. Like, that just seemed like you could have had a psychotic break at any point in this movie and had that and still have that make sense.
Well,
but when you're backing it up with, like,
yeah,
I have these crazy visions, and like, oh, this crazy vision told me to you know, put on this helmet and hit people. I'm hoping more comes out of it than that. That seems like that's a pretty flimsy thing. You could have just done that. You know what I mean? Like, the whole God's going to rub a corn dog on my brain, and so I have to go fight people.
Yeah.
Why did that even happen? You know?
So you'd rather him just be like no pretense? Because, I mean, obviously, you know,
I don't think it's no pretense. I think it's like, if he's like, watches Bible Man and is like, I should do that, and then goes and, like, puts on a superhero costume, I don't think that's that big of a jump. I think having him be touched by God by having tentacles come out, remove his skull.
Well, it's not like he wasn't actually touched by God in the movie. Like, it was
really
his, well, it wasn't. It was,
thank you.
It was no, but We literally just watched, what, last show, a movie about God creating people.
Right,
you know?
But I'm just saying, like, that is this pretense that for his visions to have a bigger part in it than it does.
Yeah, so you'd rather just him have the idea than, like, have the dream sequence.
Yeah, it just seems like this weird, like, it's this sort of tonal thing where it's like, this seems like this is going to be more of an aspect of the movie, and it is 100% not.
I wonder if there were scene shot later in it that like could just be. Kind of didn't make an edit, you know, or like they wanted to hit like a certain length or something like that.
Well, because particularly because it's all these tentacles come out and cut up his head, so you can be like, oh well, he saw the hentai on TV and that's just his brain doing that, but they just drop it after that, so it doesn't really matter. Because he even sees Bible Man or whatever that character's name is early on, and these hallucinations don't hang around. They just happen at this specific moment.
Yeah.
When it's convenient to the plot and then disappear. You know what I mean? Like, there's not more with that.
Yeah, no, I see what you're saying. Yeah. I'm trying to figure out if I'd like it with more visions later or just have it be him deciding to go. Because I like that sequence of him, like, kind of. Because I think if he just decides to be a superhero and doesn't have, like, a mythology behind it, it kind of. I don't know, it paints the character in a different way.
Sure.
Like,
And I think maybe I'm for that because I don't particularly like this character very much. I don't think he's very interesting. I think he's just like kind of a sad sack. And then, like, some of this, like the shit where he eventually becomes the Crimson Bolt and looks like trying out catchphrases, shut up crime. Like, that never landed for me.
Oh, really?
That seems like someone trying to be funny. That doesn't seem like a thing that someone would legitimately come up with. That seems. Like a lot of the humor in this movie did not work for me at all. And not just the edgelord shit. The shit that's supposed to be funny just did not land for me.
The edgelord stuff was the main stuff that like really hurt me. I thought Shut Up Crime was kind of fun.
In a different movie, it could be a lot of fun. But in this one, again, like with the tone of everything. Because this movie can't tell if what he's doing is hilarious or awful. And it doesn't come down on either side of that. It doesn't necessarily have to, but I'm just saying that it doesn't.
To me, I was kind of happy with it reading both ways. Like, I like the hilarity of, like, I like the juxtaposition between sitting behind a dumpster, being bored off your ass waiting for crime, and then smashing someone's fucking head with a wrench.
No, now that's great. Like, I did enjoy that his solution to fight crime is first to just hang out behind a dumpster and just hope that crime shows up.
Yeah. And that's the part that I took home from this movie the first time I saw it, whatever years ago it was I remember that scene is embedded in my memory of like, that's exactly what you would do. Cause they're, you know, so in Seattle, you know that there's superheroes in Seattle.
Yeah. Phoenix something. I forget his name. Yeah.
But what does Phoenix do every night? Like that's because in my head of like, all right, like John, let's just say you and I, we have money. We decide inexplicably, both of our parents get killed. They're both in Bartha. They both throw pearls at us. We decide to fight crime. We get super fancy schmancy crime fighting outfits. We work out for a year, walk out in the streets of Portland.
Yeah.
What do we do? Like, how do we find crime?
Patrol. So many superheroes go on patrol. Oh, the Tick, Batman, whatever. But yeah, but just, I mean, whatever. Just hiding behind a dumpster.
The police academy.
Yeah.
Well, there were technically the citizens.
There were citizens that were doing that. Yeah. And that wasn't until the fourth one.
Yeah.
The first three, they were just hiding behind a dumpster.
Yeah.
But I did like that a lot of him, that it wasn't even him like learning to be a superhero. It's him just hiding behind a dumpster.
Yeah. Well, and that was,
and I like they eschewed that whole thing for that.
That was a bit of comedy that I liked. It was just a box.
Mm-hmm.
And then a few beats. Look, I'll pick it up later. It's just I want to go back out and just show my location. That was a nice bit of like a fat guy in a suit thinking he's covert comedy.
Well, and just like the whole thing where he's meeting out the same, because he tries to fight crime and then gets the shit kicked out of him. So decides that he needs a weapon and his first reaction is to grab a wrench. And
wait, let's go back to that.
Yeah.
He saw the vision of the wrench. From God.
No, we saw the vision of the hat from God.
No, but the hat is a wrench. The hat is a wrench upside down.
Kind of, yeah. No, I could see that. Yeah.
Well, that's what the symbol is. Yeah, yeah.
But it isn't until he gets his ass kicked that he goes to grab the wrench.
No, but that's what I mean. But because he talks about needing. So he goes to the comic book store and we'll cycle back to him meeting, what's her name?
Libby.
Libby.
Ugh.
Cycle back to him meeting Libby. Because he saw the vision of the wrench.
Which he took to be the hat.
No, but how does he, I just forget, how does he get the wrench where he uses it as a weapon?
Because he gets his ass kicked because he just wants to see superheroes without powers. She introduces him to a bunch of stuff. He goes and tries to fight the drug dealers. They kick the shit out of him.
No, but he goes home and chooses a wrench.
Yes.
Okay, that was the part that I think I just, I just kind of forgot where that happened. Okay. Yeah. So he understood that that was his sigil. Okay.
Yeah. So yeah. then he's like, okay, well, I mean, if you're not sure it was his sigil, why does he need the Crimson Bolt? Why does he need the Crimson Wrench?
Well, that's what wrenches enact.
Wrenches enact bolts.
Well, they operate on bolts.
Right. But that's like,
I'm a tough guy laborer, John. I know what wrenches do.
Yeah, I know. But like, you wouldn't call yourself the thing that you're enacting upon.
You
like
your Allen wrenches. I'm you not got your monkey wrenches. Yeah. You got your other kind. Like talk wrenches.
I'm not the crime. You know, you're the crime fighter, not the crime. You don't name yourself after the thing you're enacting upon.
What about Batman? He hits people with bats.
Yeah, but that's his weapon. He doesn't hit bats if he was attacking bats.
He does all the time. He uses bats as...
Well, he attacks man-bat. That's a different thing.
Oh, yeah. Sorry, my bad. You're right. I just kind of forgot where the wrench thing came from. All right, so let's talk about him meeting...
Before we get to that real quick, but he meets out the same judgment on drug dealers and pedophiles and whatever as he does to someone that cuts in line.
And cue bargers, yeah.
And there's something kind of funny in that, but the movie doesn't do enough with that.
All right, well, we have to talk about the cue barging. That's what they call it in England.
Sure. And we're fancy here.
What did you call it in Omaha?
Cutting line.
Cutting.
Yeah. Not budding.
Yeah. That's what... budding?
Yeah. This movie calls it budding in line, which is weird to me.
What the fuck is... No. Yeah. Incorrect. It's cutting in line.
Yeah. No cuts.
Yeah. No cuts. Yeah. No cutbacks. No cutsies. Yeah. Not budding. Yeah, no butsies.
That's some weird East Coast thing. I don't know.
I'm from the East Coast.
West Coast thing.
I'm from Lloyd Kaufman. The Troma Studios was like a block from my, not a block, but like, it was like right near where I live. Like,
you know, now that you mention it, this movie does remind me a lot of The Toxic Avenger in that kind of like, here's some horrendous violence with a superhero story.
Yeah.
But it can't match whatever tone that the...
And
that
awkward boob job tits.
Yeah. And yes, that's the problem. That's what it's missing.
Did you see the cameo in this movie?
Of Lloyd Kaufman?
Yeah, Lloyd Kaufman in this movie. Yeah.
So I saw it a long, long time ago. I was helping out a friend where I used to work. We rented a projector to a guy that brought Lloyd Kaufman to speak at a local porno theater.
Oh, fun.
And I got to hang out at a local porno theater all day and watch Lloyd Kaufman, who talked the whole time with his fly down. I don't think he knew that he did that. But they decided, they thought it would be funny to have him speak at a porno theater.
Huh.
Yeah.
That's somewhat demeaning.
Yeah, and they watched a couple of his movies, including one that was a more recent acquisition of theirs that like basically was this sort of like cinema verite snuff film. The idea was that it was like a bunch of people recording their snuff film. So I'm in a porno theater watching fake snuff movies. Yeah, it was weird. It was uncomfortable.
That's okay. Yeah. I like Troma and Juliet. Hilarious.
This was not fun. This was like German. It was not the Troma style.
I kind of like mid to late 90s, just kind of hilarious. Hey, look.
Yeah, I prefer the weird gross Troma stuff. Yeah.
All right. So we meet Ellen Page in the comic book store.
Yeah.
Because he wants to go and pick up Bible Man comics.
Yeah. He's never heard of a comic book before.
I think he's just...
No, I'm in the Constance movie, he is not familiar with comics at all.
Well, no. But
this isn't a criticism.
No, but I'm not saying it's a criticism, but you're saying he's never heard of a comic book before. That's not...
Well, he's not... Okay. He's not a comic book guy.
Because
he's not unfamiliar with Batman.
Because he makes a Robin reference
later, I guess. But when he's like, I need superheroes that don't have superpowers. He thinks Batman has superpowers, I guess.
There's a guy in the store that makes fun of him for wanting to buy the Bible Man comic. And that's the most empathetic character in this movie. Because that's someone that hung out at a comic book store when I was little. If I saw some jerk-off 44-year-old walk in and ask for Bible Man, two things. One, why am I at a store that has Bible Man comics? And two, why is that jerk-off buying Bible Man comics?
Yeah. No, that was weird. Like, her response was perfectly cromulent.
Well, hers was good.
Yeah. Which I also like that the art in that Bible Man comic, intentional or not, made me think of Fletcher Hanks, who's this like old comic book artist from like the 30s or 40s or whatever, made these really, really terrible comics. There's a great collection called I Will Destroy All Civilized Planets that I highly recommend you check out because his comics are very weird.
Yeah.
But they're very like crudely drawn or whatever. And it ends with a backstory that his son tells that's kind of fascinating. But whether that was intentional or not, it very much made me think of that. And that made me very happy.
Yeah. I did like the shitty art there. So this movie came out in, what was it, like 2008-ish?
It was like 2010 or 11.
Okay. Of the list of slurs that Ellen Page says in her first lines of dialogue, which ones were unacceptable back then? Because she says, why do you like that gay shit? That's some Mongoloid shit. You ever think about how weird Mongoloids look?
Yeah.
Oh my God, it'd be weird to be a midget.
Yeah.
These are all things that happen in her first lines of dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
Now, remembering back to 2011.
Yeah.
Gay may have still been about acceptable, but you know, people said, hey man, that shit's gay, as like a pejorative.
Well, there was the whole, and I couldn't necessarily put a date on this, the whole like weird ironic racism thing that went on for a while. I'm saying that kind of like ironic edgelord stuff that was going on, which I think is more what James Gunn was going for rather than like ironically being
that's what I was trying to figure out. So assuming this is the post-gay as pejorative being socially not acceptable, because at no point did anybody go, oh, this is a great idea, but people used it.
Right.
Her entire line of dialogue is meant to be, she is tone deaf to the world and just this, she's essentially
She's a Kevin Smith character.
I don't think Kevin Smith writes characters that are meant to be shitty. He writes shitty characters.
Yeah.
But I mean, like, she's like a garbage person, and he doesn't write garbage people.
It's a person that likes Kevin Smith movies.
That's a better way to put it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. As I was a Kevin Smith defender for his first four movies, unfortunately he's made like six since then.
Yeah.
Probably like eight since then.
No, it's like, it's with anything. And as much as I dislike Kevin Smith, the worst people pick out the worst things of their movies to pick up on. Like when Tarantino had all the people that tried to do his movies, or Wes Anderson had all the people that tried to do his movies.
Okay, so she says just all sorts of offensive things, and this is during the years that all those words were offensive.
Yeah.
Still are. I like this as a character trait, because you don't see it that often where a character is essentially your lead, and she's not a villain in the movie, is shitty.
Well, she's shitty, but it's like, it's taking that kind of manic pixie dream girl thing and being like, what if she was like legitimately terrifyingly insane?
Yeah. You don't see that
it's
often.
Not, cause it, yeah, it's not fun.
Yeah, which I really enjoy. Like, it's nice to see, I don't know, it's nice to see, like, actual shitty people. Like,
mm-hmm.
She's not a villain, and she's shitty, which is, like, you don't see that all. You don't see, like, I mean, dare I say nuance, where it's like, oh, she's a perfect, like, I doubt she would punch any of the pejorative. Like, if a gay person walked in, I'm sure she'd be completely accepting, but, like, she used that term pejorative.
No, but like, she is a legitimately, like, troubled person.
Yeah.
Whereas that she gets very involved in when she finds out that he is the Crimson Bolt, she gets very involved in the violence of it. And I think even her attraction to him is not, because I've read something, you know, people are complaining like, oh, like she'd be into this guy. She's not into him. She's into this idea that the superhero thing, and that like that she gets to commit this violence and she's allowed to.
Yeah.
And he's this conduit for that. Like, she is just this deeply, deeply troubled person.
Yeah, she's not into she's not into Frank. Yeah, yeah. She's into the Crimson Bolt. Oh, why would someone think? Oh, that's a dumb take.
Because people are dumb.
Yeah,
you've heard this show. It's terrible.
Well, I mean, it's not as terrible as thinking that.
Yeah.
Oh wait, no. I just remembered all your opinions.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, thank you. I've been working hard on them.
I don't remember really what happens.
Well,
here.
She tells him, "Don't call me Libby," or it's like, "If my name's Libby, don't refer to me as the Libby." Can.
Oh, yeah, what does that mean?
The Libby's fruit juice,
I don't know what Libby's...
whatever. It was a brand of stuff. Like, it's this very ham-handed reference, meta reference. I don't know if it's supposed to be a joke on that meta thing or whatever, but it was bad.
I did like him going, you just made fun of my name. You told me not to do that. Like, that was a fun delivery.
Sure. I didn't enjoy any of the comedy in this movie.
I don't know. I guess it's technically comedy. I like the comedically awkward moments. I found fun.
This is a little bit. I was thinking about this when I was watching. I'm like, this must be how you feel watching The Big Lebowski, where I'm like, there's apparently this is supposed to be funny, but I'm not. It's just not landing for me.
I get what you're going with, but no part of this is as funny as other people find Big Lebowski.
No, fair enough. Yeah, like, fair enough. I'm just saying that. This is supposed to be. I'm not trying to compare the two. One. It's more just like this is comedy supposed to be happening at me, and I'm not on board with it.
See, I took the comedy in this. I took as almost like when like I'm not comparing this to Shakespeare, but I'm comparing this to when Shakespeare's comedies, where it's like No one's ever laughed at Shakespeare since fucking 14 whatever. Like
Fraser Crane.
Yeah, nobody that's not a drunk and says, "Oh dear Lord,"
oh,
and when he falls off a stage. That's the only thing I know about him is when he goes, "Oh dear Lord,"
falls off a stage. You should edit that in, that clip of just him falling off the stage.
I hope I remember to do that. I found this amusing in that kind of in the Shakespeare comedy way in quotes where it's like, "Oh, this is
droll."
Yeah, droll. Yeah. I found it droll. At no point, but like, there was nothing in here that maybe borderline. I mean, I've said I laughed at stuff, but I didn't actually laugh at anything. But there was stuff that I was like, "Oh, wow, what a delightful job! I'm glad you wrote that."
All of it just felt like such a reach. It was very trying hard. I felt.
Well, John, I'm not of your millennial thing where effort is frowned upon. Yeah. I'm of the go gen. Wise?
I'm Generation Next, the Pepsi generation.
I'm Generation Crystal Pepsi.
That's the problem. You just like that Van Halen song.
Right now.
But yeah, so he's fighting crime by just hitting guys in the head with a wrench. And she starts figuring out that it's him. They end up teaming up for crime. And yeah, she gets way too into it because she's like, "Oh, there's this guy that keyed my friend's car." They go to stop to serve justice to him. And she's like, "Well, I think it was him." While she almost kills him.
Oh, yeah. She tries to smash his head in with some kind of sculpture, and he stops her. And this is kind of our first, like, look of, oh, boy, this is this lady's a little unstable.
Yeah. But it's great because, I mean, she really brought this, like, manic energy that the movie, I think, needed. Because Rainn Wilson's Frank is so, like, flat in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
That the what you sort of felt like maybe Frank was supposed to be. She is, which isn't, it's not a bad thing because she's this mirror image of him. Yeah. This distorted mirror, but she was the most fun of this entire movie because he's not a fan of that happening. Cause she's made up a whole little costume for herself as Bolty.
Yeah. What a great name.
Yeah. Well, I like the whole conversation about all the different names that he's just not on board with.
Yeah.
She's like, "Well, that was my favorite, but okay, let's, you know."
The fact that they settle on Bolty. Also, that bit of Ellen Page is so good in this
movie. Yeah, she's really great.
I wasn't going to tell you before this, but I'm just going to tell you right now, that was my favorite name.
Yeah, the creeping bam.
Yeah. The creeping bam. That's so good.
But I will also say, as we kind of mentioned before, that all the violence in this movie is brutal, which again makes you think of the trauma stuff, where it's very blood spurty and over the top. Like at the very beginning when he's... sees Liv Tyler smoking pot with some of Jacques' thugs, and he has this fantasy of him stabbing the guy in the neck with a poker.
Yeah,
And just blood pouring out. I guess this thing where his fantasy is not that I'm like, "Hey, I'm standing up for myself. You should leave." It's that he's murdering people. The movie, like, it's like, oh well, his fantasies are that he's the psychotic, violent guy, and I don't think the movie does that enough. Like, it doesn't go that far. Because he's still hitting people with wrenches and stuff like that, but it doesn't really, it never makes the judgment call of like, this is absolutely bad what he's doing. Because because at the end, he's just like, and then I stopped doing it. The end. Like, there's no, he doesn't learn anything necessarily.
Yeah, I see where you're coming from. It doesn't. And I think I enjoy that about the film is I don't know. I think there's certain times that a lot of these movies kind of dictate what you're supposed to think about them.
Right.
Where
they tell a story?
Well, this does tell a story.
It tells a story about a guy that's violent until he's not.
No, but he wasn't, like, in the same way that in the beginning of the movie, he was super violent, just didn't enact it.
Mm-hmm.
At no point at the end of the movie is it like, oh, cool. Like, the end of the movie, his big happy ending is being stuck in the same shitty apartment as a fry cook, staring at crayon drawings that he did himself.
That he has a black friend, yeah. It's...
But that has nothing to do with it. Stop just trying to be argumentative.
No, he does. He does. His drawings are like him saying hello to different black people. That's what the crayon drawings are.
Most of the crayon drawings were him and Libby at the gun store and his happy memories.
Another stuff and him saying hello to black people.
And him hanging out with a tiger. Do you think all black people are tigers, John?
No, but I'm just saying.
I get it. You want to fuck 17-year-olds and you think all black people are tigers.
I hear you loud and clear. Okay, so let's say, for example, Clockwork Orange. Turns out I'm still a psychopath. Book ends with, turns out I'm still a psychopath. And then I meet my friend, Pete, who's like, "No, I gave all that up." And I'm like, "Oh, maybe I'm ready to give that up too." This is like, "Oh, I just brutally stabbed this guy in front of my girlfriend."
That's actually how the book ends.
That's what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But the movie ends, this movie ends with him being like, "Well, I killed a bunch of people. I stabbed the fuck out of this guy in front of my girlfriend. She left me and now I'm fine. I have a bunny."
Yeah.
That's what growth is there other than arbitrarily just being like, "And I'm done."
Oh, yeah. No, I kind of see what you're saying. I don't know that they're positing that he's actually better.
Oh, the movie ends in this very uplifting note. And I don't think ironically, this is a fucking Swiss Army Man situation where the movie's it's good. It's good.
Oh, I was taking that very much as he's.
How?
He's locked in a room filled with its
locked.
Own.
Locked. It's his house. Well, whatever. He seems very happy about where he's at.
In a room, smiling psychotically while petting a buddy, looking at his own crayon drawings. Fucking bananas times.
But he's found other important moments in his life to take time to paint, to draw pictures of the other important moments in his life.
Well, that's fine. But that's like somebody finding Jesus in prison. You're still in prison.
But like he seems much happier. He's not clubbing people with a wrench. How is that any different?
I think the idea is this is not a happy ending by any stretch.
The movie absolutely presents it as a happy ending.
No, but it's a happy ending for a fucking complete psychotic. It's not like I was cured all right. Like it's
right. But I feel better if it was I was cured all right. But this is just like I got enough courage to get a bunny. And I took, I can draw my picture, give me
the way this movie ends. If they had a Coda or Super 2 that 5 years down the line, falling down style, he gets stuck in traffic and goes, fuck this, and starts murdering people again. Mm-hmm. It totally fits. I don't think this posits a curative end. Like he's not done being violent. He just thinks he's done being violent.
He's done being violent in this
really
movie.
Oh, I didn't take that at all.
Yeah, because he learns lessons, because after she left he realized that he wasn't the chosen one, she was, for some reason, because she's smart and great and all the stuff that we had no idea, because she's not really a character.
No, but I mean he mythologized everybody beforehand too. Like at some point he snapped and became violent, but before he became violent he had that same level of complete psychosis towards, like, the fact that this drug addict waitress is the one that saved him and became his wife. This is the same level of psychosis at the end.
I think those are two different levels of psychosis. Being like, this person that I love deeply loves me too, versus I needed to do all this to save her so she could go on this magical journey to save other people, are completely different things.
Yeah, I just think it's the same level of psychosis. He's still a nut job.
So loving someone is psychosis?
No, but a nutty person pathologizing love is.
Yeah, I don't.
She's not this super smart person curing the world through it. He says going to school for anthropology. That like his narrative makes no sense. This is still more nuttiness.
Well, yeah, but she clearly like she has kids. And, like, so are you saying this that her story after the fact doesn't happen? She just leaves and he invents all this stuff for her?
I think maybe it happens, but his narrative of, well, this was the best case scenario. She's an ex-drug addict that got knocked up with five kids.
Mm-hmm.
Like, not to say that sounds so shitty, but a lot of people do get cured from drug addict. I don't mean to be the discursive of anybody got past some fucking hard shit. I'm saying in context of this movie is, I don't know that we can believe that ending. And the fact is, his ending is, I'm alone in the same apartment staring at more drawings on my wall. To me, that's a hilarious
he moved from having two drawings on his wall of only two moments in his life he thought was important to having a whole bunch of him waving goodbye to someone working in a toll booth.
That's
silly. But the point is, the way the movie presents it, which is very uplifting, there's no ironic detachment there. Which, and if there is, again, this movie has problems with tone.
Yeah, I guess I just read a lot more, I read a lot more psychosis into the best thing that's happened to me. It used to be just when I met my wife and that police officer time. Yeah. This time, that nice lady at the toll booth, to me, that's fucking bananas. That's great.
No, that's bananas, but like, that's much more positive than I'm hitting people with a wrench. You know what I mean? Like I found joy small moment.
Yeah, I see what you're saying.
And with a terrible soundtrack, it's all presented like it's uplifting.
I see what you're going with. I think it's a happy ending in the same you can be happy in being completely psychotic, but this could easily turn into another psychotic break a week down the line. You know,
you could. That would be very convenient. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's not convenient. I mean,
it is because like he's supposed to be better now. Because he's back with Liv Tyler. He's not still committing, he's not still bashing people during that time.
Well, he's not back with Liv Tyler. She left him after a couple months.
For those 2 months, he's back with her. He's not still bashing. She leaves. He's not like, well, back to bashing.
Yeah.
This is supposed to be growth for him.
Yeah. I mean,
he just put that behind him. He's done now.
Yeah. You're not incorrect.
Yes. The end.
No, not just the end.
Yeah.
The fact that they show that level of psychosis in the drawing. makes it a more interesting ending than you're painting it that
I think
way.
It's not Psychosis. I mean, like, it's weird that he's doing that, but
he's
like...
He's waving at a toll booth person saying, that's one of the best moments of my life.
He's significantly much happier. He's finding joy in the small things. That's what the movie is trying to tell you.
So if someone has gone... So you think that... Jack Nicholson in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest was better off after he got electroshock because he was more smiley.
He stopped
acting out, John. He stopped bringing whores to the asylum. He was smiling in bed.
But Rainn Wilson has all his abilities. Like, he's not.
He doesn't have
upon.
His wrench abilities anymore.
Oh, I'm sorry. I forgot. Wrench's brain.
Hey, John,
brain.
What happens if King Koopa invades this area after the end of this movie?
Mario has never used a wrench, ever.
Well, in the Mario Brothers movie, he does. It's
okay,
in the poster.
Sorry, fair enough.
I'm pretty sure
they're just holding one. He doesn't actually use it.
The end of the movie happens.
Right.
The idea is, well, there's a whole kind of arming up sequence, which I think is one of the more delightful sequences in the film, where they go to the gun store and buy a whole bunch of shit.
Yes, it's fun.
Which is a fun little thing. And I wish that, and again, this goes to if there was somebody other than Rainn Wilson that was bringing a little bit more energy to the part. Maybe the rest of the movie would have played more like this. But anyway, they go to the gun thing, and it's delightful, and they arm up. Mm-hmm. And it is great. They buy a bazooka, which doesn't play. Wait, did they buy a bazooka? At one point,
she's holding a pink gun. He's like, takes it away from her and hands her a bazooka.
Okay, that's it. Yeah, yeah. Which, Chekhov's bazooka, because that does not play off at all.
No, it doesn't.
It's just a nice thing. But here's the thing I like about that, which goes against type in this. Rainn Wilson is this doughy, he's just a guy. He's good at shooting.
Yeah.
Like, he's not great at shooting. But the thing is, the easy joke would be he can barely hit the picture or whatever. Like, the fact that he's competent at, like, it's small, but that's like...
He's not scoring headshots or anything.
Yeah,
but
I think that's an attention to detail, or at least, like, the mark of somebody actually giving a shit about the movie where they don't do the easy, like, oh, this fucking nerdlinger can't even hit the thing. It's like, no, he's like a... He's an average person that had a psychotic break and is going to murder people with a wrench.
Right.
As we've all done.
As everyone has done.
Yes.
Which, I was just thinking about, you mentioned the whole falling down thing, which I think this movie does definitely have part of, particularly the murdering someone that's in front of you in line. But that basically Ellen Page is Frank's Nazi guy from Falling Down.
Oh, yeah.
Where the Nazi guy is to Michael Douglas, like, yeah, this is basically, like, I'm you. Like, you've been doing the stuff that I've been fantasizing about. And...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, she's, like, this more just this id of that, like, this insane... Like, this is what actually, like, you should be doing, or this is what, you actually think you're doing. I'm actually like this, and that's terrifying.
Yeah.
And I did like that a lot.
That's one of my favorite scenes in any movie in Falling Down, where the Nazi guy's like, see these shoes? They got waffling at the bottom. Good for stomping, and he... I think he says the N-word or
that's why it's your favorite scene.
No. Maybe he says queers or something. But yeah. he says some pejorative. But the what's it? Michael Douglas.
Yeah.
Like Michael Douglas, his fuming, the buildup of this shitty human versus Michael Douglas, also shitty human, and those two. It's like reading Punisher comics, but like less sexy. Right. I don't know. I love that scene. Like
reading to Punisher comics and realizing you have a boner.
Yeah, which look as
it
one
happens.
Does. Yeah,
Frank Castle's hot.
Yeah. John Barenthal. Yeah, but no, I think that scene's so good. Like the way the two actors are just kind of building this kind of shit heap, and the understanding of one character versus the understanding of the other, and like thinking they're on the same page. Like there's an awesome subtle play.
Again, same thing with that. Like I just like that Ellen Page this whole time is like, no, we're on board. Like, come on, you want to do this stuff too.
And Ellen Page like apologizes, like that one time I almost killed that guy. It was my first day on the job. Oh, wait, before we get to the end, Rainn Wilson and her are getting gas. And the guys that are friends with Jacques are there and see them, and they attack, and they start getting their ass kicked. She saves him by driving her car into Sean Gunn's legs.
Yes.
Pinning him against the wall, and her joyous going, ha, ha, this is so great, and now your legs are gone, was Ellen Page knocked out of the goddamn park.
Yeah, like, it's terrifying, but also, like, doesn't feel out of the realm of what this character would be. You know what I mean? Like, it doesn't seem too much. It seems like more like building on what this character already is.
And it pays off so hard in the final scene. So that's why I want to bring that up. It's her going nuts, being so elated at breaking a man in half. Sorry. So they go to attack Footloose's compound.
Well, so they're breaking in. Footloose, or Kevin Bacon, is trying to sell a bunch of drugs to some guy.
Oh, that's right. That's the setup. Yeah.
Yeah, and like just gives Liv Tyler to him.
Oh, yeah. That's so. Yeah, before we even get to that other the shit with Rainn Wilson and her, that is a pretty brutal scene.
It is.
Of Kevin Bacon's realization of like, no, man, that's my girl. And like, he doesn't even really try to describe, like, that's my girlfriend. That's not one of the whores on the couch. And he's like, yeah, all right. He's like, no, come on, baby. He just wants to show you something. Go upstairs. He's like, oh boy, like this is, that was brutal.
Well, and then, then he says to one of his henchmen, he's like, well, I guess this is over, you know. Like,
oh no, he talks to my coworker. He goes, hey, you know, if your girlfriend gets confused with a whore, you know, I guess it's time for it to be over. Mm-hmm. And this is one of the great Michael Rooker things. There's a lot of good eye work in Michael Rooker of him being like, you see, he's kind of too good for this, but like, I guess he needs the money or whatever. Like, there's a lot of backstory in Michael Rooker's eyes.
Yeah, like he's, you know, but he's great. It's almost like, I remember when I first saw Jackie Brown. And I was a little bit bummed. I'm like, you had Robert De Niro and you just had him play like a sack of laundry. And then you watch it again, you're like, oh, but he's a great sack of laundry.
Yeah.
You know? So it's that. He's just, whatever reason he's this character, he's fantastic at it.
I like the sequel where it's Meet the Sack of Laundry.
Meet the Sack of Laundry, yeah.
He's attacking the compound and they have a full bulletproof vests on.
Mm-hmm.
They throw some of the pipe bombs. People explode. It's super gory. She kills a dude with her Wolverine claws, which is actually kind of hilarious. And technically she'd be X-23, not Wolverine. But, you know, that's just me.
One thing that bothered me during this, and this wasn't a reaction, that was more a reaction to your nerd shit.
Yeah, no, it's fine. It's fine. You know, I know you don't read books, but, you know, some of us know a little bit about the X-Men lore.
Mm-hmm. You know, I've read the X-Men, Star Trek, The Next Generation crossover.
You know, I have. I got another follow up with that. Yeah. I was trying to make a joke, and I went, "Oh no, shit! I actually have heard that." Yeah,
my life.
Yeah. My wife.
But like when it starts doing the weird and, for lack of a better comparison, Scott Pilgrim shit of like he says bombs, and the word bomb shows up in the background, like there's no escalation to that point. There's no like. He's having a psychotic break, so it's got even more complicated. It's just the movie is like, oh, this might be fun. What if we just did this now?
Yeah, that's why I kind of wish the coming off the Ellen Page kind of rapey bit is if he had taken it harder and that's where it leads to the full psychotic break and that's where you start seeing like bang and boff in the – or – all right, so they're taking the compound. He takes a bullet to the chest, which is, you know, he's got bulletproof on she gets hit square in the fucking dome.
Yeah.
Which, that's the thing that sticks with me from this movie is that scene. It's, holy fuck, that is brutal. And the way he shoots it is so goddamn real.
Yes. Of,
she is just still. And it's gory, but it's not played for gore. It's played for like, oh fuck, this really energetic, although quite scary, but like this energetic, lifeful person from seconds ago is just gone and... eyes open, half their fucking head is like, god damn, that is an effective little bit of like scene.
But if you decided to after that fact, because after that when he like reacts and starts like shooting everyone and throwing bombs and stuff, we start seeing the Batman like thwack whatever, where if the idea is supposed to be that he's descended full on into comic book mode, that would make some sense. But then you have that bomb thing earlier where that wasn't the case.
Yeah,
but it doesn't work at all for me. Like, and I think about like other. Honestly, I'm thinking about Danny McBride shit, where you have this awful character, these awful people doing these awful things, but you're still kind of rooting for them. I never had that here.
Yeah.
And so like you're presented with the reality of the shit that they're doing, but then it's like he sees her dead, and then it's like, well, now I'm just mad.
So you wanted Rainn Wilson to recognize the song "Country Roads" coming from inside the house.
Coming from Michael Fassbender playing.
Okay, got it.
No, but it's just like he sees her dead, and then it's like, oh well, I guess I'm a superhero now, and starts shooting everyone perfectly and throwing bombs at them and killing everyone, and then it only gets real again when he gets back into the house and
he gets shot a few times, which
shot a few times, but then
real.
Like when he rescues Liv Tyler from Kevin Bacon, like there's this little standoff, doesn't really matter, whatever, and then
wait. You did skip and I think this kind of, I mean, it goes against your point. Maybe where you skipped it or forgot it. But I think you see his break when he brutally kills Michael Rooker. When he, like, slams his head into the fireplace, like, six more times than needed to be.
Yeah, but, he's already been clubbing a guy in the head that cut in line with a wrench. Like, that's not that much of a lateral move.
Hitting him once or twice. Like, I mean, not to say, but it, Crime of passion and a crime of, you know, like thinking ahead.
Yeah.
Is hitting somebody once is a crime of passion. When you're on top of him and just, he's well dead.
It didn't have that effect for me. I understand what you're saying, but I'm just saying like it didn't read that well. Cause it was just he's already like gone like beast mode, whatever.
Yeah.
And it's just like, yeah, now he's doing this. But when he like Kevin Bacon, like almost kills him. And then he, at the last minute, is like, oh, no, you don't cut in line. You don't molest kids, whatever. And starts brutally stabbing him.
Yeah.
While Liv Tyler looks on. That is awful. And if it almost like ended with that, I almost would be happier with that. But then, even the aftermath, I do like the aftermath of, okay, now we're back together. How do we live with this? How do we live with what just happened?
Yeah.
And like, that's actually like, you could make a whole movie out of that I would love to watch.
See, I think the end is awkward for a number of reasons, but I think that there's a few ways the tone could have paid off the rest of the movie is either Liv Tyler puts on a bat suit and just joins. She's snapped.
Right.
Not saying this is the best ending, but I think
totally
more interesting ending. And then it pays off one tone. The other tone would be to have him go to disassociate fully. To have her not be there, to just have him be fully fucking gone, that's fine. But to kind of combine the two doesn't land for me.
But I do very much like the idea of she's a superhero. It's the Crimson Bolt and Junkie Girl. Where it's like, I'll fight the bad guys. I'll go over here and nod off.
No, but she's
constantly getting high.
No, she just runs up and like hits people with syringes. That's her superhero. She can throw syringes from across the room. No, it's full of like, you know, bat cyanide. Wrench cyanide. Yeah.
But yeah.
Or no, WD-40. She has syringes full of WD-40.
That's awful.
Yeah, and then she ties people up with plumber's tape. I already got the fucking sequel. I'm going to write the James Gunn in a minute.
But so it just, then he has this epilogue of her going on to do great things, leaving him and going on to do great things while he just buys a bunny and is comfortable with himself.
Yeah, the other.
But like, he never becomes comfortable with himself. He never makes that journey. He's just, to the end, he just is.
So I think what should have been clearer in the end, or one way or the other, is she doesn't go on to do great things. She is in, because he says she has a way of talking to people that other people understand. And she's doing like lines from just regular 12-step books. So she's doing the Keep It Simple, Stupid. She's doing the FINE, which I forget what that stands for. But like, she's using like just acronym nonsense. Not nonsense, but acronym. This is standard self-help shit. And he's saying she's got this way about it. I think it needs to be clearer that her amazingness is purely in his head. And he's mythologizing a happy ending for the lady that he saved. Because even like in his pictures, it says while he's walking away from the house, she's got a speech bubble saying, oh, thank God you saved me, which didn't happen.
Well, you don't know that it didn't happen.
No, but it didn't happen on screen. And the way the character reacted to what was going on, Liv Tyler reacted to going on, she would not have said, thank God you saved me.
I guess you do. He does find a letter at home. And like that could be, I didn't freeze frame it. That could be in the letter of like, hey, thanks everybody, but I got to go.
Yeah. I just mean like I think they could have it should have gone either more realistic or more fantastical, but like kind of the splitting the difference, which I think some of the movie struggles with. Yeah. The end doesn't really, I don't hate it, but like it, there's a lot of ways it could have been stronger and like not even like major changes, just like slight tonal things. Cause I think if you pay off a tone at the end, choose one and pay off, I think that repaints the rest of the movie. Mm-hmm. Like then when you remember the movie, you think of it that like, so if it went, the end is him going full batshit and make it clear that's what happened.
Yeah.
You can go back and see the whole movie as, oh no, this is somebody that's been batshit the whole time, you know? Right. Or if you paint it as, oh, this is the completion of a character arc. Then you go back and go, whoa, well, that was a bad choice. But still, it would be a choice, you know?
Well, I've been trying to avoid doing this because I feel like I bring this up several times. But like, Taxi Driver ends with a huge violent explosion. And it doesn't end, like, he saves Iris at the end.
Yeah.
But it doesn't end with like, hey, that's great. It ends with like, boy, this guy's still crazy and he's out there. You know, it's more ambiguous where this is much more like, oh, it's good. It's fine. He has a bunny. And I don't like you said, like it's going on one tone. It's going on the tone of this superhero movie was actually the case, that he actually completed this arc and it's good. But I don't think the movie up leading up to that point is fine. I don't think the ending is as ironic as
you know. I think the end was meant to be ironic and isn't as clear as it should be. I mean, the fact like those
in terms of how much this movie fucked up tone, you could be very much right. Yeah,
because I think the drawings on the wall are too nutty. I think the end is too fucking psychotic to not have meant to be irony. And I think tonally, it's not clear.
Well, I think but, another reading is that like much with a lot of things like the hallucinations of like Jesus on the wall that didn't pay off. He did these drawings at the beginning that you didn't remember until the end. You know what I mean? That he's like, oh, remember this? Like, yeah. I drew the other good moments in my life. It doesn't really mean a lot because you didn't like, oh, yeah, you kind of did that at the beginning and it was weird.
Yeah. But the thing is, I think it's part of, it's not why I like the movie, but like, I think this movie is like a few really small choices away from being really, really strong. And I think that's kind of what I resonate with. Like the kind of originality and like the oddness of it, like mm-hmm. the uniqueness of it, like really makes me, I can look past some of the flaws because they seem really easily fixed, although they didn't get fixed, but like, it's right there. And I kind of like that because at least it's, I remember this movie. I'm there for this. Like, this is in my head.
As much as I did not like this movie, I still respect it for doing its own thing. And I would watch it again before I watched the gray airplane fight from Civil War. 100%.
Oh, well, that fight was that
the one? Civil War is bad. It's boring and it sucks.
Yes, except I like that fight just because I like Spider-Man a lot.
Yeah, no, Spider-Man's great.
Yeah, no, the rest of it, I agree with you with it.
Yeah.
Pretty much that entire movie could go fuck off, but I like that fight just because Spider-Man's fun. Yeah, literally. Yeah.
Tom Holland is a gift to the Marvel Universe.
Yes, the rest of that movie, you're totally right. It's just.
I'd rather watch this like fumble its way through whatever it is it's trying to do.
Yeah.
And try versus just be whatever the Marvel
Universe. And I think that's what really like kind of gets with me. It's like, even if it's trying two different tones at once and not settling on one, so many movies don't even try for a tone. They just want to be whatever 50% of Pantone is. They just go, no, we'll just do half the colors. Desaturated, yeah. Let's just,
well, it's also like, I talked about at the beginning, like these cluster of movies that came out around that time. It's like, here's an opportunity of what superhero movies could be. For good or ill, like, this is this other route we could take. And do more with them or like do weirder stuff with them. And then let's not do that. Let's do this.
Yeah, this could have heralded in an era of interesting superhero movies that never came.
It's a bummer there's not more of them.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, because this is a fully established genre. This is a mainstream thing. There should be all, like, these kind of movies coming out all the time.
Well, I haven't seen it. It's the same guy, but Brightburn is of this ilk, apparently.
James Gunn. I think he just produced it.
I've heard
mixed things. But yeah, but like,
but the idea that, is, yeah, yeah, yeah.
But is, a superhero horror movie. Great. Yeah. Yes. Let's do that.
What happens if Superman was psychotic?
Yeah. You know, I mean, there's beautiful. Been tons of comics about that kind of crap, but like, do that.
Yeah. Do it. Yeah. Actually do it in a film. All right. So that was Super 2010 by James Gunn. John loved it and proved that.
Go watch Slither. Slither instead.
Go fuck a 17-year-old. And you
know. Well, I was going to say watch Slither, but whatever.
Yeah. Too bad I've got no choice. All right. So for next episode, I think we should do a little float tank action.
Mm-hmm.
We'll take some drugs, lay down, and maybe turn into some kind of feral man beast.
For a change, yeah. Usually I'm more of an insectoid thing, but let's go feral this time.
Yeah, we can. By the way, we're announcing we're now on Feral Audio. Not true. Not true at all. But we are going to be watching Altered States.
Altered States, the Ken Russell.
Russell, starring first name Hurt, because there's two of them.
Yeah, William Hurt.
William Hurt, yeah. Yes.
My friend Milo ate his chocolate bar when he was performing here at the ART, and it ruined his career.
My name, Milo, ate his chocolate bar. Feels like a euphemism, but somehow isn't. yes, Altered States, the 1980 film, which introduced the world to float tanks and...
insanity.
Insanity.
No one was insane before 1980.
Yeah. All that electric shock treatment.
Nope. That was just for fun.
Figment of a very sane mind.
Yep. Yes. All good.
Hey, that man's doing something weird. Throw a wrench at him. So we're going to watch Altered States.
Uh-huh.
Came out the year I was born, 1980.
Mm-hmm. The weirdest Star Wars movie.
Exactly. Yes. So we'll see you next time. Follow us on Twitter, JawsPod. Our listener, our followership is...
We have 15?
Is that true?
I'm asking.
Last I looked was 12.
Woo! So, double digits, baby. Yeah, double so dig.
Go make us look less embarrassing.
Make looking embarrassing, that's our job.
Exactly.
Help us not do that.
Your job is to do the...
Save us from ourselves.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
All right, let's go to the gun store and raid that compound. Bye.
Bye.